The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 409 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. I love to know what you have to say about the show on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. If you have a friend who's not a big sports fan, maybe they don't follow college basketball, and they say, why do they call it March Madness? Well, now they understand. And now you understand why I always say that Thursday to Sunday are my four favorite days on the sports calendar, bar none. Absolutely love it. And this year was wacky. You can't script this stuff. 10 double-digit seeds, one in the first round. That is a new record for the NCAA tournament. Hawaii wins for the first time in the big dance. Yale from the Ivy League is moving on. Northern Iowa wins a game with a half-court shot. Middle Tennessee State beats Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans. How many of you ripped up your bracket right then and there? Arkansas Little Rock knocks off Purdue. Stephen F. Austin, the Lumberjacks were dancing. I mean, it was a crazy first round. And then in round two, as if it couldn't get any more nuts, what happens to Northern Iowa against Texas A&M? Up 12 with 44 seconds to go and lose the game? Huh? How is that even possible? Is that mathematically possible? Answer yes, because it happened, and the Aggies win in double overtime. We have a lot to get to on today's show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm still not at 100%, still getting over this cold. It's been with me for about 2 weeks now. At least I can talk. There was a week where my voice was pretty much shot. I lost my hearing partially in both ears, cough, congestion, the chills, everything under the sun. I am feeling better, though, not quite at 100%, currently listed as day-to-day, but I'm not nearly as sick as fans of Northern Iowa. I mean, jeez, you're already looking for flights for the Sweet 16, and then that happens? I mean, that was Three Mile Island. That was Chernobyl. That was just a volcano right there against Texas A&M. I still can't believe that happened. And I watched the game. I watched every game over the weekend. Took off Friday, watched every game, just vegged out, watched college hoops. Love it. Absolutely my four favorite days of the year when it comes to sports. But we're going to talk about the Spurs. The national media bobbleheads always forget about them. You don't see them on SportsCenter. They're not hip. They're not sexy. They're not trendy. Guess what? They just win. They've been doing it forever, and they keep on doing it. And now they held the Warriors under 80 points. What? We'll talk about the mess in Chicago with the White Sox. Chris Sale, their ace, did not hold back going after Vice President Ken Williams. And in the world of tennis, we have an early candidate for Moron of the Year. That is on the way here on episode number 409 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts. I'm with you every Monday on The Grizz. That is grizzlyproductions.tv. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes, please keep those 5-star reviews coming. Now, I do have to give myself a little pat on the back because last week I gave you 5 potential first round upsets. And looky here. Somebody went 5 for 5. That's right. In the Midwest, I gave you Gonzaga, and I said Gonzaga's going to win 2. And they made me look a lot smarter than I am. But that front line with Wilcher, the transfer from Kentucky, and Sabonis, the son of Arvydas Sabonis, those guys can play. I mean, look what they did to Utah, 82-59. Wow. And Seton Hall was one of those trendy McTrenderson teams. Sometimes people are prisoners of the moment, and they only watch the conference tournaments. They only watch, you know, that last weekend before Selection Sunday. So everybody's talking about Seton Hall. I like Gonzaga to win too. They beat Seton Hall by 16. I mean, you got a veteran team in Gonzaga there. They always play better when they're a higher seed. Seton Hall's best players are sophomores. So I had Gonzaga. You know I'm going with the Cuse. Had to go with my alma mater. Did not think they should have been in the tournament with an RPI over 70, with a loss to St. John's on the resume, and losing 5 of 6 to end the season. But they get in, took them over Dayton. Then they end up getting Middle Tennessee State, and now they're in the Sweet 16. Who would have thunk it? Gave you VCU over Oregon State. I thought Oregon State was overseeded as a 7 seed, just not that good. I gave you Yale, went to the Ivy Leaguers there. I wasn't wowed with Baylor all season, and Baylor disappoints in the tournament. And then Northern Iowa, a team that beat North Carolina back in November. So I took them against Texas. Again, Texas, another team that just didn't wow me. And they also don't shoot free throws, which I thought could be a factor in a close game. And Northern Iowa ends up winning that by 3 on a shot from mid-court. What a crazy Friday night. You had that game going on, and you had St. Joe's Cincinnati, an 8-9 matchup. Everybody thought would be tight, could go either way. That's exactly what happened, and St. Joe's survived 78-76. It looks like Cincinnati has a dunk to tie the game and send it to overtime. They review it, and the ball was just in his hands long enough to wipe out the basket. Crazy finish. 2 in a row there with Northern Iowa and St. Joe's going on at the same time. What a wacky Friday night. But my brackets are looking pretty good. My Final Four is intact. I had Maryland, Texas A&M, North Carolina, and Virginia. Surprised a lot of people by taking Maryland, but I like the talent in their starting five there. Texas A&M. If you would look at my bracket right now, there's a huge ink blot on my bracket. Because I kid you not, I wrote down Northern Iowa on my bracket. I actually wrote it down in pen, Northern Iowa into the Sweet 16. And I had to scribble over it and put in Texas A&M. But what a crazy first 4 days of action. And we'll talk about it more coming up. First, I want to tell you about our great sponsor, and that, of course, is iHome. From the portable color-changing IBT74 to the 100% waterproof IBN6, iHome has all of your Bluetooth needs covered. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome offers a full line of headphones, earbuds. Go to the website. You can look at all of their great products, their apps, their accessories. That site is iHomeAudio.com. iHome is also the number one brand in digital speakers. So if you need some speakers, it's a place to go too. iHomeAudio.com. I have iHome products. Not only do they look really cool and they stand out, but the sound technology is state of the art. It's the best around. iHomeAudio.com. Take a look. I know you'll find something you love, like the IBT74 or the IBN6. iHomeAudio.com. Back to the tournament here. I have to get to Texas A&M, Northern Iowa. Again, Northern Iowa, one of the Cinderella stories. A team really during the regular season that wasn't great. They weren't one of these mid-major teams that comes in with a record of, you know, 29-4 or something like that. Northern Iowa had 12 losses during the regular season. And yet, they hit the miracle shot by Jesperson on Friday night from half court. They beat Texas, and then they're up 12 on Texas A&M with 44 seconds to go. The game is over, right? It is over. Done with. Finished. Forget about it. And then a 14-2 run in just over 30 seconds. Now, keep in mind, In the entire first half, Texas A&M scored 22 points in 20 minutes. In a span of just over 30 seconds, they scored 14. I mean, this is impossible. And that's the beauty of sports. There is no script. You can't make this stuff up. It just happens. No one would have believed you if you would have said, yeah, Northern Iowa was up 12 with 44 seconds to go and lost. Nobody would have believed you. They would have said, what time did happy hour start for you? Four turnovers in the last 30 seconds. They could not even get the ball in bounds. And I know the guy that normally does that for them was injured, but still, you have to be able to get it in bounds. Just hold it, get fouled, make a few free throws. You don't even have to make all of them, and you move on. And they did hit one home run pass for a dunk. So it wasn't like they were shut out this whole run. And when you saw him get that play, you thought, okay, now it's over. But it wasn't. Turnover after turnover after turnover. And then they get trapped in the corner, double teamed, no place to go. And they try to throw it off the A&M player. Doesn't work. He grabs it. He goes in for a layup. Even if you just throw it out near midcourt, as soon as they touch it, you know, clock's continuing to run there. Just throw it out towards midcourt. They're not going to be able to get a good shot off. But wow, what a meltdown there by Northern Iowa. And you feel bad. Daniel House finally came alive for Texas A&M. This guy, who can be a big-time scorer, had done basically nothing until the end of regulation. And then in overtime, he looked like he was Michael Jordan. I mean, House could not be stopped. It was a house on fire. I just keep thinking, what are the Northern Iowa players thinking about right now? I mean, how do you possibly get this game out of your mind? 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years from now, they're still going to be thinking about this game. I mean, how can you not? Up 12 with 44 seconds to go? That game is over. Wild, wacky finish. And Northern Iowa is a good team. I mean, they play the game the right way. A lot of interchangeable parts, guys who can shoot it. That was bizarre. And then Oklahoma, that's who's up next for Texas A&M. Oklahoma with Buddy Hield. If you're VCU, someone needs to explain to me why you're not trapping Buddy Hield and taking the ball out of his hands. Why are you not doing that? How do you let arguably the best player in the country continue to get shot after shot after shot? In the first half, he didn't score the first 10 minutes, and they were up 21-7. I mean, Oklahoma was lights out even without him scoring. He only had 7 in the first half. Second half, he took over the game. He showed why he's one of the elite players in the country. 36 points in the game. He scored 21 of Oklahoma's last 26 points. I mean, he was doing it with threes, fadeaway jumpers, getting all the way to the rim. He was scoring every which way. That was vintage Buddy Hield. What a fun player to watch. VCU hung around, though. Only lost by 4, 85-81. But you got to double team the guy. You got to trap him. You got to make somebody else beat you there. Maryland, my dark horse to get to the Final Four. I actually have him in the championship game. They were in a tough one with Hawaii. They win by 13. Final score was deceiving here. Maryland went on one big run, and that was the game. They went on a 14-0 run in the second half, ended up winning at 73-60. Maryland missed its first 15 three-pointers. How do you do that and win in the NCAA tournament? But they did. Big game for Melo Trimble. More exciting finishes, Wisconsin and Xavier. Nobody was talking about the Badgers coming in. You don't have Frank the Tank Kaminsky anymore. You don't have Decker anymore. They're a number 7 seed. They beat Pitt in the first round, a game that probably made your eyes bleed. Neither team got to 50. 47-43 was the final. Wisconsin won that one. So they're playing Xavier, who everybody loves. Xavier, a 2 seed, really good team. And Bronson Koenig comes up huge. First, he hits a 3 with 11 seconds to go to tie the game. Then, offensive foul, and I thought it was a good call, against Xavier. Badgers get it back. They call a timeout. Sometimes you're better off just playing it out and not calling the timeout so the defense can't get set up. They called the timeout. Play worked perfectly. Koenig, Fallway three in the right corner at the buzzer. Splash. Right in front of his bench. Unbelievable shot. And remember the three he made with 11 seconds left. Because if he doesn't make that, they're not even in this position. So Wisconsin at the buzzer, 66-63 over Xavier. How about Notre Dame and Stephen F. Austin? The Irish, the 6 seed. Stephen F. Austin, the 14 seed with Thomas Walkup. I mean, people probably never heard of this guy until this weekend. He played great in their two games. He had 21 against Notre Dame. He also was phenomenal against West Virginia. They won that game easily. They beat West Virginia by 14. I thought West Virginia was a team that could give North Carolina trouble, maybe get to the Final Four. Stephen F. Austin was brilliant. And Walkup's one of those guys, you can see why college coaches overlook him. He's not very athletic, but he plays the game the right way. He's got a mid-range jumper. He can go right or left. He's always under control, always makes the right decision. And that team just did not take bad shots. So they have the lead final seconds against Notre Dame. And then Rex Pfluger, who's normally in there for defense, rebounding. He's a role player. He's not a scorer at all. He tips in the rebound with 1 second left, and Notre Dame wins it 76-75. It was his only basket of the game. What timing by Rex Pfluger, big man on campus now in South Bend. So the Irish win by one. St. Joe's, Oregon, good game. Ended after midnight here on the East Coast. St. Joe's the number 8 seed. Oregon the number 1 seed. And the Hawks were up 7 with 5 minutes left. Could Phil Martelli's crew pull off a gigantic upset? Answer, nope. Dylan Brooks was big late. He had 25 points. DeAndre Bembry, how about that haircut? I mean, you could lose, you know, like a microwave in his hair. He had 16 points, 12 rebounds. This was the final game of the weekend, and it was a dandy. Oregon was in trouble here. Again, down 7, 5 minutes to go. They made some big threes late, got 2 big defensive stops, 1 a shot clock violation, and then 1 Bembry trying to do too much, dribbling out top, turned the ball over. So Oregon survives 69-64. Only team from Philly still left is Villanova. They've had a lot of doubters because of the recent history, not being able to get out of the first 2 rounds. Well, not only did they beat Iowa, they destroyed Iowa. It was 54-29 at halftime. Thanks for coming. Drive home safely. Game over. 4 of the 5 starters for Nova were in double figures. Josh Hart had 19. This is a very balanced group, guard-oriented. Now they take a lot of threes, and that's the knock. If they're not shooting well, they could be out. But they beat Iowa 87-68. I mean, this was a demolition derby. And to be honest, Iowa was fortunate to get there. How about the push in the back at the end of the Temple game, which Iowa ended up winning 72-70 in overtime? Got a put back, but there was a clear push in the back on that offensive rebound that was not called as Iowa won that 7-10 matchup against Temple, ran into Nova, and Iowa just got drilled and ended up losing the game by 19 points. And then the Cuse, my alma mater, is still playing. I mean, it is unbelievable. I have a lot of friends that went to Pitt, and they don't want to hear a peep out of me because Pitt beat Syracuse 3 times this year. Pitt's 1-and-done, only scored 43 points, lost to Wisconsin, and now Syracuse is on to the Sweet 16. How about this matchup in the Midwest in Chicago? Syracuse a 10 seed, Gonzaga an 11 seed. But one of those teams is going to be in the Elite 8. Syracuse got Middle Tennessee State, who had the upset of the tournament, beating Michigan State, who was one of the favorites out in Vegas, along with Kansas and North Carolina, to win the whole thing. Kansas and North Carolina, by the way, do look like the two best teams right now. I mean, they really do. Virginia struggled with Butler. You know, Butler can do that to you. I mean, they kind of grind it out. Those teams play very similar styles, well-coached, defensive-oriented teams. I do like Virginia a lot, but they get in some of those grinders, and it's tough. Carolina and Kansas, to me, look like the two best teams. But best teams don't always win. We certainly know that. Back to the Cuse, they actually trailed briefly in the second half, and then a 21-2 run. Michael Binajay was awesome in this game. He's about 6'6", 6'7", can handle it, can shoot it. He's had a phenomenal year. And the freshman, Tyler Lydon, played an outstanding game. Syracuse ended up winning this by 25 points. And look at the ACC. Six teams in the Sweet 16. That is a record since the field expanded. The ACC is 12-1. Only team that lost was Pittsburgh. On the other side of the coin, the Pac-12. Where's Bill Walton? Conference of Champions. Pac-12 looks horrendous. Arizona gets whacked by Wichita State. Wichita State just too physical for Arizona. Cal goes out. Now, I know Wallace was hurt. Their point guard, their leading scorer. They lose to Hawaii by 11. Oregon State out. USC loses. How do you give up a layup on an inbounds play at the buzzer? Providence beats USC 70-69. Providence hung around with North Carolina. Chris Dunn is a lottery pick. He's a phenomenal point guard. Bentil is a very good inside player as well. A young buck who's getting better and better and better. Providence has two outstanding players. They beat USC. Of course, Oregon State loses to VCU. I don't even consider that an upset. And then Colorado lost a close game against UConn. So the Pac-12 has Oregon, and that is it. They look really, really bad. All right, let me set the table for you here as we get to the Sweet 16. In the South, you have Kansas and Maryland, and Miami and Villanova. Again, Maryland's been my dark horse team. I haven't been thrilled with the way they play at all times, and they're not deep at all. But that starting five, I think they're legit. So those are your matchups in the South. In the East, which is in Philly, North Carolina, Indiana. How about that Indiana-Kentucky game? Great game. Two schools with 13 combined championships. Indiana won it 73-67. And I heard Charles Barkley, and Charles Barkley was probably my favorite player growing up. Barkley and Magic, love those two guys. But when I hear him talking about how Calipari didn't have a lot of talent on this team, is the worst team he's had, he had the best backcourt in the country, arguably, with Ulis and Murray. You know, and Poynthers has been around too on the front line. I mean, it's not like he had nobody with him. There was some talent on that team. If guards win, that's what we always hear. Guards get you deep in the tournament. He had probably the best backcourt in the nation. So I don't need to hear that Calipari didn't have any talent. Give me a break. Indiana moves on. They will get North Carolina. That is a dandy. And then you have Notre Dame and Wisconsin there. In the Midwest, it's Virginia and Iowa State. Virginia plays great D. Iowa State loves to run and gun. They beat Arkansas Little Rock by 17 in the second round after beating Iona by 13 in the first round. Again, they scored 94 points. George Niang, very versatile, kind of a point forward for Iowa State. That's another team, not a lot of depth, but they're starting five. They can play. And in the bottom of that Midwest bracket, I already told you, Gonzaga against the Cuse. You know, it's probably going to come down to if the Zags can make shots. Their guards played fabulous against Utah. Can they do that again? I like Wilcher and Sabonis for sure, but what are the guards going to give Gonzaga? They played great against Utah. We'll see if they can duplicate that. In the West, the Dukies will take on Oregon, and then at Texas A&M, Oklahoma. My Final Four, still good to go. Maryland, A&M, North Carolina, Virginia. Now, we'll see what happens after the Sweet 16. But so far, not looking too bad. And I'm still impressed. I gave you five upset specials last week and went 5 for 5. I mean, really, I should be taking donations here. This is episode number 409 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday. Show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes. And I'm on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Feel free to let me know how your brackets are looking. Do you still have a bracket, or did it hit the circular file? Did you rip it up, throw it in the shredder, whatever? Let me know on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. All right, to the NBA. I mean, how about the San Antonio Spurs? Now, March Madness is going on, so I'll admit I was not locked into this game. But what they did to Golden State in prime time, holding that team with Curry and Thompson and Green, holding that team under 80, seriously, that's playing some defense. And you know that I praise the Spurs each and every year. I always talk about how they don't get enough credit nationally, and it's their style of play. I mean, they win with defense. They take good shots, high basketball IQ. Popovich is a Hall of Fame coach. They do all the little things. They're not flashy like some teams. They just win. They play the right way. LaMarcus Aldridge was a monster pickup in the offseason. He had 26 and 13 boards in this game. Kawhi Leonard had 18 and 14 rebounds. And San Antonio has won 44 in a row at home. They held Steph Curry, and a really good job by Danny Green. They held him to 14 points. He shot 4 for 18 and 1 for 12 from 3. San Antonio is 59 and 10, and you don't even hear about him. Golden State 62 and 7. So Golden State 3 games better, and they still play each other twice. Tim Duncan, how about this storyline, came off the bench for only the third time in his career. But Duncan's one of those guys, he doesn't have an ego. So many pro athletes nowadays would not be willing to do that. With Duncan, he's about winning. Team guy. Golden State is winless in San Antonio during the regular season since 1997. Wow, that is a stretch of 33 straight games. They just cannot win in San Antonio. So I want to tip my cap once again to the Spurs, who I love because they never get enough attention and they just keep on winning and they do it the right way. 59 and 10. Amazing. And they beat the Warriors 87 to 79. What a defensive job they did in that game on Saturday night. Now, to the baseball diamond. What a mess in the Windy City. You heard about Adam LaRoche, right? He retires kind of out of nowhere from the White Sox after Vice President Kenny Williams told him to cut the amount of time that his son, Drake, who's 14 years old, was spending with the White Sox. LaRoche said, quote, "Prior to signing with the White Sox, my first question to the club concerned my son's ability to be a part of the team. We reached an agreement. The 2015 season presented no problems as far as Drake was concerned. The current situation arose after VP Ken Williams recently advised me to significantly scale back the time that my son spent in the clubhouse. Later, I was told not to bring him to the ballpark at all," end quote. So LaRoche said, you know what? To heck with you, I'm done. And he retired. He had $13 million on the table. He's 36 years old. To be honest, he didn't play real well last year. But this was in his contract, that his son could be around the team. And all of a sudden, Ken Williams says, nope, can't be around. And he says, all right, I'm done. And he retires. I mean, it was very bizarre. Well, then Chris Sale, who is their stud pitcher, their ace lefty, he did not hold back at all. He spoke to reporters and said, quote, "This is a bigger issue than being told his son can't be around. It's a much deeper issue. We got bold-faced lied to by someone we're supposed to be able to trust." And he's talking about Williams here. He said he came to the players and said it was the coaches. He went to the coaches and said it was the players. Then he came in here and said it was the owner. So Chris Sale is saying that the players heard three different stories from Ken Williams. So your all-star pitcher is calling your vice president a bold-faced liar. And he's doing it in public. Sale, by the way, said that Drake is a great kid and that all the players on the team really liked the kid a lot. Said he wasn't a distraction. He was part of the team and they liked him. Well, now the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, comes out and he's trying to say that everything's okay. Really? What's next? Is he going to tell us that everything is okay with Northern Iowa in the final minute of the game against pressure? Speaking of that, did you hear Kenny the Jet Smith? Just before halftime of that game, if you're watching the studio show with Ernie and Clark and Charles Barkley, Kenny was going on and on and on and on about how you can't press Northern Iowa. Said you can't press them. If they get up 10, the game's over. Forget about it because you can't press this team. And he was making this definitive point about it. And then look what happens. Up 12 with 44 seconds left and they blow it. Why? They couldn't handle pressure. Couldn't inbound the ball. I wonder if they can play that tape back of Kenny Smith. I mean, that was priceless. I mean, he was so adamant that you can't press this team, and they just folded in the final 44 seconds. Final story of the day here on episode number 409 of the Sports Report takes us to the world of tennis, and this is an ugly story. Indian Wells CEO Raymond Moore, a candidate for the Sports Report Moron of the Year. Before Serena Williams played Victoria Azarenka in the finals on Sunday, Moore opened his mouth and inserted his foot. This is what he had to say, quote, "You know, in my next life, I want to be someone in the WTA because they ride on the coattails of the men. They don't make any decisions and they're lucky. They're very, very lucky. If I was a lady player, I'd go down every night on my knees and thank God that Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal were born because they have carried this sport. They really have." End quote. Now, it's 2016 and we're still hearing sexist comments like this. Moore is 69 years old. He's a former pro player. He's from South Africa. He took over as CEO of Indian Wells in 2012. I mean, you know, when I first saw this, it's like, what? Really? This guy said this now? Jeez. So Serena, after her match, was asked about it, of course, and she responded. I thought she was very calm, too, very poised in her response. She didn't get angry. She wasn't yelling or anything like that. You could tell she was upset, but her tone was not, you know, boisterous or anything like that. She said, "Obviously, I don't think any woman should be down on their knees thanking anybody like that. If I could tell you every day how many people say they don't watch tennis unless they're watching myself or my sister, I could not even bring up that number. So I don't think that it's a very accurate statement. I think those remarks are very much mistaken and very, very, very inaccurate." And then she was asked if the comments could have been misconstrued. And she replied, "Well, if you read the transcript, you can only interpret it one way. I speak very good English. I'm sure he does too. You know, there's only one way to interpret that. Get on your knees, which is offensive enough, and thank a man. We as women have come a long way. We shouldn't have to drop to our knees at any point. So I feel like in order to make a comment, you have to have history and have facts. And you have to know things. You have to know of everything. I mean, you look at someone like Billie Jean King, who opened so many doors for not only women's players, but women's athletes in general. I feel like this is such a disservice to her and every female, not only a female athlete, but every woman on this planet that has tried to stand up for what they believed in." Now, Moore also had said that the WTA, the Women's Tennis Association, has a handful of very attractive prospects. Yep. He apologized, issued a statement, said his comments about the WTA were in extremely poor taste and erroneous. He's sorry. He apologizes to all the players and the WTA as a whole. A wise man once said, "You can't fix stupid." These statements by Moore are simply idiotic. And I agree with Serena in that her matches, to me, are more intriguing than a lot of the men's matches, especially here in the U.S. When she's playing in a major, I'll tune in. I was watching the Australian Open final, the U.S. Open semifinals. Remember those big upsets? I was watching those for sure. Absolute shockers. And I'm not as interested in watching Federer or Nadal or Djokovic or Murray. All great players, don't get me wrong. I mean, we're talking about some legends of the game. They're Hall of Fame players, but they're just not interesting to me. So Serena certainly is not riding on their coattails. She's won 21 Grand Slam singles titles. 21. She's done fairly well on her own. Hopefully we won't be hearing from Raymond Moore anytime soon, a candidate for Moron of the Year. This has been episode number 409. Thanks so much for tuning in. I appreciate it. Spread the word. Again, we're on Twitter. Tell me how your brackets are looking. You want to talk about the White Sox situation, Spurs, Warriors, Moore and the WTA making sexist comments. You can respond on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. I'll be back again next Monday. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy March Madness. How can you not? And keep the 5-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. This has been episode number 409. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.